Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Bench Units for part three of the Euro Cup Finals preview trilogy. We have got a guest this time. Our guest is not just James, although James is also here. And James, when we put out for questions for this person, we got one of the best but also least insightful questions we've ever gotten. So as you go to intro our guest, I'm gonna put on my best Jason Bateman in Arrested Development voice and ask, who?
Yes, so when we put out for questions, we get a reply from Jack Gibbs saying who, which is really funny because it's a southern low pointer. Like it's you guys are like there's a lineage there. There's a Jack Gibbs, Jim Palmer, Abs Tagres lineage. Here they go. I've given away the spoilers. But I will I'll go through my whole spiel anyway. We are joined by a longtime listener, first time caller. The only man who has ever needed to be helped out from a car park in front of an indoor arena he thought was a football stadium in the middle of the night by strangers because he dropped on a curb he couldn't get up. A man who until last week probably thought his football team was going to win something this year. The only person I know who has not once given me a satisfactory answer to the questions, what are you doing or why did you do that? We probably would have taken his invitation away if we remembered he just lost an overtime game to the Manchester Revolution. Probably my favourite Algerian, but I haven't given it much thought. It's GB Junior, University of Worcester, and most importantly, Sheffield Steelers, Abs Tagrest. Abs, welcome. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, man. Happy to be here. I've always wanted
Are
to go on
you?
this. Yeah.
Are you still happy even after that
I
intro? Because
mean,
James never wants to intro these. And this was the first one he's ever been like,
to be fair,
hey, get out of my way.
I'll say you nailed it, James. You hit it on the spot.
That was like the podcast equivalent to the basketball thing where someone takes it personally, like, no, I've got this guy. Like, let me check this guy one on one, where it's just like, no, I remembered you getting stuck in a car park in Cologne or wherever it was, and I was like, this is the funniest. We'll not get into that. Abs took himself away for a little adventure because he thought we were beside the football stadium. It was just like an arena, like a concert arena, an ice hockey arena, whatever, like. But yeah, the funniest thing I've ever heard. But anyway, Abs, as we say, thanks for being here. And we're going to start with the same question as we always do before we get into some EuroLeague 3 stuff. But how did you get started in wheelchair basketball? What's your deal?
So basically, once I had my, I don't know what to call it, like injury virus thing when I was seven, my parents basically decided I needed to get into sports because I always played football and that. So probably around a year or two after that, like nine-ish, went down to Aspire with London Titans, got to like a have a go session, haven't stopped since. So I think it's a bog standard of a lot of people have a go session and carried on.
Yeah, had a go and then just went and then was going.
Had to go until your parents were like, this gets you out of the house. We'll keep you signed up. What's that? You're not enjoying it? Don't worry, we've already told the team you'll be there.
It's the great parent thing of like, I imagine, Mark, you're the only parent on the call here, but and you probably haven't really even gotten there yet in terms of her being old enough to have like that many activities, like non-curriculars, but it's like free time versus amount of driving is the big decider on whether a kid gets to do something. How long do you leave me alone? But how long does it take me to bring you there?
You could tell my dad regretted his decision as soon as we had to drive to Nottingham three times a year for
Yeah. Well,
whatever junior.
three times a year.
Well, I think it is a real thing, man. It's like it is a real thing. I think people sign up to wheelchair basketball and they don't because like the sport that everybody knows about is football, right? And whatever town or like village you grow up in, you could grow up anywhere and there'll be like 30 different kids' football clubs within like spitting distance of your house, more or less. And I think
If
then
you're
like
really good at spitting.
But then I think like wheelchair basketball, everyone's like, oh, there's this club in London, that'll be cool. And it's like, oh yeah, the South Division is everywhere from the South Coast up until like Nottingham or Leicester. It's like, oh, so half the country for my kid who has bounced a basketball twice and probably will sit on the bench for most of these Division Three games this year.
I didn't even know Plymouth existed, man.
As
Get
in,
sent
as a
down there.
club or as like a place?
But like 14-year-old me didn't know it was either. Going down there for Div 3 for the first time was
Are you a Londoner originally?
no, I'm from Watford, but
So yes.
basically.
But functionally, yeah, that, you'll have that, people, you'll have people from inside London being like, that is not London. You'll have people from like 35 miles further out than you being like, yeah,
yeah, if people
Londoners,
from
yeah.
Kent call themselves from London, then I'm a Londoner, I guess, but
you're
the
an
red
Arsenal
bus
fan.
past my house.
But yeah, that does make sense, because I think people who are from like in and around London are just like, oh yeah, there's London, there's the immediate areas, and then there's the wilderness. So it's like not massively surprising you didn't know Plymouth was a place, even though that's also on the south coast.
It is also so common to be like, there's probably a thing when you're growing up where it's like, yeah, there's a really like low level club right beside my front door, but like, oh man, I hope my kid doesn't get good enough that I need to bring him some. Like, I don't know where you started playing, Mark, but was it not Steelers, or did you
Oh
go?
yeah, it was Halifax Cardinals, dude. It was
Exactly. There's probably
20 minutes from my house, and then yeah, I think I got to like 14 or 15, and I was like, "Hey, mum and dad, how would you feel about hiking me an hour there and an hour back 3 times a week?" And they're like, "If it gets you out of the house, no,
And they
no
went, can
at
Harry's granddad do it? Yes.
Yeah, entirely fair.
All right, we're hijacking this just to make fun of English geography at this point.
We are. Right. So yeah, Abs, as we touched on just before we hit record, me and you have never met before. I was, as is increasingly becoming the case as we get ready for these guest episodes with people younger than ourselves, we realize how old and out of touch we're becoming. James is being kept young a little bit by still having to deal with you guys coming through at camps
Well,
and
I'm not
stuff.
out of touch, I'm just old.
But yeah, first time I became aware of you as a person and player was probably similar to a lot of other people, which was your Commonwealth Games appearance a couple of years back. So you mentioned going to your first like have a go session, and then your dad hiking you backwards and forwards to Nottingham. How does that go from, you know, that being your first impressions of the game to, you know, take us from that point to tip off of your first, well, there wasn't a tip off in the 3-on-3 games, was there? But that countdown they did where they went 5-4-3-X-3, and everyone's like, oh, well done. I hope you got paid a lot for that. Take us on that journey.
Well, I guess for me, I started on absolutely hating it, because I was like big into football when I was younger. I was in the like big claim to fame. I was in the Watford Academy as a keeper, and
oh,
I was
wow.
like, I wanted
I'm
to be.
I'm gonna hit the Zoom reaction where it does the clapping hands. Keep talking.
I wanted to be a big thing in football. Obviously, couldn't really do that, getting paralysed. But we moved, and then went to this session. Absolutely hated it, because I was like, oh, all my friends are gonna see me playing a wheelchair, and I'm gonna this and that, what's the point? But my mum and dad were like, well, you've got to carry on, we don't want you getting fat and sitting around the house all the time. So I carried on, haven't stopped since, and a lot of things like lockdown hit, and I don't think I was really going anywhere before lockdown, and then I kind of just trained in a garden, did a lot of stuff during lockdown, as well as just sit around and play PlayStation. But
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and then went to this trial, thought nothing of it, and then ended up getting invited back to selection camp, and I was like, damn, there's a real thing here.
That's wild.
Does it ever make you feel weird about the wheelchair basketball world, that you were like, oh no, like I used to play able-bodied sports, and now that I have a disability, like I don't want all my able-bodied friends to make fun of me or think I'm weird for being disabled, but you're a one in wheelchair basketball and you all just constantly get stick for being disabled anyway? Do you think the ableist abuse would be worse in a disability sport than if you just played football in a wheelchair?
I was hoping not to have to link back to that question, but that was what piqued my interest most, where you were like, I didn't want my friends to see me playing in a wheelchair. Presumably they were aware you were in a wheelchair at that point, right? You weren't like still pretending you could walk.
Yeah, no, I was showing up to school on with my fake legs, but apart from that,
I'd love the idea of you being a wheelchair user day to day, and your friends not batting an eyelid, but you push on to a football pitch and you put the goalie gloves on. They're like, "Ah, what's wrong with you?"
Man, I was basically, well, during school, I was just used to sit me in the middle of the goal, and people just pelt the ball, because I think I was a sick goalkeeper, but they would just shoot it at me. So
yeah, you just had a wide piece of metal stuck to you.
Yeah.
I went through the same thing. But sorry, I keep derailing this. I'm so sorry. I keep derailing this to make fun of you. I'm so sorry. But yeah, prior, this is why we can't have people that I like on the I like everyone that we have on the podcast, but this is why we can't have people that I have a previous relationship to on the podcast. But anyway, prior to the Commonwealths and all that, how much awareness did you have of like the global wheelchair basketball world? Like, how much did you know about like the international game and this player from over here, and or was it just club stuff?
Well, like, I watched all of like the Paralympic Games stuff. The little nerd, so I used to still do just watch everything on YouTube that I could. But I don't think I knew everyone. I knew like abroad, you could go abroad because I was in Titans when the two lads from Titans left to go to Varese. I remember that quite vividly because that was quite a big thing at the time for us in the club, at least. I'm assuming not that big
Yeah.
for anywhere else.
Less so for Varese, if I remember correctly. But that's not neither here nor there. I don't know if Varese still have a team anymore. I think they do. Sorry,
But
go ahead.
apart from that, like, not really. Obviously, I knew about GB, but I couldn't really name any other player outside of GB, to be honest.
That's fair. So you have that awareness of kind of the GB program or whatever. You get called back to these Commonwealth selections, which are being selected by Matt Foden, who was previous junior team coach. And you know, the kind of centerpiece of Team England, which you ended up being a part of, was Lee Manning. And there's a bunch of other guys who had, you know, been in and out of the GB program who were at the last stage of selection. So the point at which you get there and you get selected, or you're going through, you know, the final stage of selections and whatever else, is that the point at which it hits and you're like, oh, damn, this is like, I'm gonna be going from, as you said, not knowing that Plymouth is a place as you played Div 3 to being like, oh, I'm gonna be rocking up to the Commonwealth Games and playing Canada and Australia and whoever else.
Mate, the whole like selection process was just, I don't know, a blur, because I just remember being so excited all of the time and not being able to like know what to do with myself. I remember I was in the car. We had this thing in Birmingham. I was with Charlie McIntyre. We were both being driven to something with his dad, and we both get followed by Lee at the same time, and we just go absolutely ballistic, just like, what in the world's going on? Lee Manning knows who I am, but that's what it was for a lot of the time. Because when I first met you, James, at Commies, I think, same with a lot of GB players, just first thing was Commies. So I was mad.
Yeah.
I'm
Did he
going
unfollow you
to
both after you lost the
have
semi? I'm joking.
to. I hope
You just get a notification right as they call a technical on you in the semi-final
not.
that you've been unfollowed.
I'm
Sorry.
gonna have to check with Bench Units HR here. Are we allowed to refer to it as commies? Is that fine?
Oh yeah,
Communists.
didn't think about the repercussions of that.
The
Communist
communist
wheelchair basketball championships.
that would be a tournament I would watch, whether it would be politically correct or otherwise. And yeah, obviously I'd seen you there, Abs. I'd not really seen you before. And do you find that coming on the scene like that, do you find people kind of know who you are to a disproportionate extent, if for no other reason than that clip that got cycled round of Lachlan Dalton sinking you guys in the semi-final?
I mean, in the junior program, a lot more people knew who I was, and yeah, I got drilled for not jumping Lachie Dalton quick enough. But yeah, to be fair, a lot more, because I was playing up to Div 1 at that point,
Right.
like not starting for Div 1, starting in Division 2, so it was quite a big jump. But I don't know, not really, I don't think, not significant, I guess.
Fair enough. It was very, very much more his 15 minutes of fame than yours, I guess.
Very
But
much so.
shout out to that guy, by the way, made that shot and then like showed up to Vitalid for half a season and was like, nah, I'm kind of famous in Australia. I'll just head back. Like, he has dined out off of that for a good couple of years now, and rightfully so.
I mean, why not? I love it. Like,
No, absolutely.
Was gonna say, I didn't know what happened to him. I saw him sign for Vitalid, and I was like, oh, fair enough. Might do all right, and then he never saw him again.
I have no idea. I just didn't really play a whole lot there for, I had no idea what went on, but maybe, yeah, I don't know. Hope he's well wherever he is. I hope he's drilling game winners somewhere in the world.
Just not over me again.
Pardon?
Just not over me again, please.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You gotta stay away from him. That's your kryptonite.
Gonna say we're gonna get to Euro Cup 3 finals and he's gonna suddenly crash through to Stone Cold Steve Austin's music and suit up for Violin and drop another one on you.
Just Izmir kit.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, obviously off the back of that, Abs, the kind of the other thing we want to talk about is you've made your way now into the kind of extended GB program, which has obviously been crying out for a low pointer for a little while, because I think since about 2008, everyone's had the idea that Abdi's going to retire at some point soon, and here we are 16 years later, but you know, they've got to keep the next person in line. So what's being kind of integrated into the extended squad for the national team? What's it done for your game?
I think it's been massive for me. Like, went to my first camp last year and learned so much. I just learned that I was pretty oblivious of the whole basketball thing. So going to these camps showed me the reality of, like, where I need to be. Like, looking at Jim, James, Simon, all them as low pointers. And I was like, yeah, I'm not there. But maybe work harder. But, yeah, it's good to be involved. Like, I'm there with a lot of my idols, like Terry and that, and Abdi.
Sure.
So it's mad.
A low point of calling Terry their idol is you're setting yourself up for failure here. So it's silly.
Is that why you shoot so many threes? I would argue that's more Terry's job than yours.
I've only shot two this season.
Did they go 50%? In? 50%? Oh, there you go. You'll take it. Stop now and you can just ride off into the sunset as a 50% exactly. 3-point shooter. You actually job. Answered the one of the people who wrote in a question anonymously said you've been to a few prep tournaments now. Does it give you a sense of what you'll have to do to ultimately crack the 12? And you kind of answered that by saying you're just kind of looking at all these guys. Do you I always find it so interesting because Abdi's such an anomaly as a one pointer. Like, do you look at this is a me question, but do you look at the work that Abdi does and the work that Jim does and kind of go, all right, well, I'll try and take this bit from him, or I'll try and steal this bit from him? Like, you're saying, well, you watch a lot of games. My question is, like, yeah, do you try and steal stuff from other players, like in terms of moves or stylistic things?
Definitely. Like, obviously the thing with Abdi is just his shot is unbelievable. Jim, workhorse. I like it's probably rogue being a GB player, but I'd say probably my favorite low is Yannick.
Man, everyone loves it. Like, Yannick's
love great. Play. So I just try to get everything I can from them. And I'd say I'm quite an odd build for a low pointer, lengthwise and size-wise. But yeah, I just want to be a fusion and like mix up and get the best of every player that's about that I can learn from. And yeah.
The low pointer thing is interesting because, like, all the way from like 1 to 2 points, I think the guys who are like the standouts tend to have the more like out there disabilities, like with the exception of, like, obviously Yannick, like, prototypical, this is what your one needs to be. But we've never had a low who's like, hey, I've been watching all these guys and I think the guy to model myself after is the Argentinian guy with one arm, because I think if I can just use one arm, I'll have cracked it. But yeah, there's like so many different shapes and sizes, but I'm always interested by it because people see like Abdi's shooting as the skill that isn't really replicable, and people are like, oh, well, we cut, you know, I'd love to be like Abdi, but I can't model my game after being able to shoot, you know, those percentages consistently, because it's not something you can necessarily just learn. Yeah. And then like Jim is the more like low pointer traditional skill set in terms of like workhorse, like you say. So I think people gravitate towards that and like, well, this is stuff you can learn and pick up and replicate easily. And then it's like, well, if that's the case, like how come like there's a couple of guys in like Yannick and Jim who are so much better at it than everybody else? So it's like it's a tough thing to find the middle ground on. But I think as lows especially, you have to, like you say, you have to be a fusion of like the best parts of a whole bunch of guys, and also everybody's range of disability is so different, right? So you can't be like, hey, I'm just gonna get to be the bicep size of Yannick and then I'll be awesome as well.
Yeah, I
I
think
think
what makes you dangerous as a loner is if you can get to the point where you're, because as a low, you're always going to be that fifth guy on the court. You're the fifth threat. And if you're, as a fifth threat, going to knock down all of your shots, make all of your layups, make it so they still have to defend you, and you're not entirely a mismatch on offense as well. Obviously, I'm going to be a mismatch towards a lot of people, but if a 3-5 comes up behind me and I can contest their shot, then I'm happy. So that's where I want to be, where I'm not kind of forgotten on the court and I have to be thought about.
When you say you're a mismatch for a lot of people, are you having some Martin Edwards flashbacks from this past week?
Every time I play against Martin, I'm afraid of him. I see his eyes and he's just hunting me.
He loves it as well. Like I obviously don't have to like confirm or deny this, but I'd say there's some talking done every time he hit a shot
Oh,
over here at
it's the
the
standard. It's like ult tie, pick it out and stuff like that.
weekend.
Every shot, and I'm like, I'm
Oh.
stretching as high as I possibly can, but his shot release is so, like, it's like robotic.
Yeah.
And he just puts it up, and I'm like, "There's, yeah,
Yeah, it's behind
cash."
his head. The one thing I want to say about the kind of points that Mark and you were making about the one pointer skills being replicable or not is like we talk about the Abdi stuff not being replicable as if as in it not being something that you can train, as if Abdi isn't just this good because he's trained flat out his whole life. Like Abdi is, there might be some God-given talent in the shooting, but Abdi is this good because he's probably taken more shots than all three of us together in his lifetime. Like Abdi is that good because he doesn't stop working.
Well, in
Like
my defense, I packed it in 4 years ago, so I think that affects the numbers. But
oh, for sure. But also you could pick any three people. Like
but no, I do, shooting is the weirdest one because everybody shoots, right? There's so many like drills you'll do in training where it's like, right, we split the forwards and guards, and the forwards come up here and do, U-turns into, pick and rolls or whatever, and the guards do dribbling off, whatever. Everybody shoots, everybody does shooting drills, and some people get better at it to like a insane extent. Some people get better at it to like a point where they're passable, and some people get actively worse at it as their life goes on. Shooting is the toughest one to replicate because it seems like there's almost, it's so like dependent on your various like hand-eye coordination and other proprioception, all that stuff. So I think usually when someone's like an insane shooter, you can't be like, oh, I'm just going to model my game after them. It's like, yeah, what if you shoot 50% worse than they do? That's
Oh, no, I
not
don't think you can go out and try and but like
yeah.
you could be the best player in the world and go out and try and play like a non-shooter and replicate it and play the role of a non-shooter because you can do a lot. You don't need the defense to play certain ways off you to do that, whereas you can't go, well, I'm just gonna act like I can shoot because the defense doesn't jump you, and then you can't like you can't do the next thing if you dribble off a pick and throw the ball wherever the help comes from because there's no help because you're bad. Like,
Sound like we're bashing you.
I don't mean you, I mean in general. This is just we're being a bit vague for you being here, Abs.
That's an in question. One question we had on here in terms of you finally cracking the squad, Abs. What do you think the odds are on Abdi actually outlasting Jim and Jim retiring before Abdi and possibly even, you retiring before Abdi?
I mean, I reckon at this point Abdi's going to outlast me, to be honest. I remember went to camp, he wasn't there, and I was like, oh, maybe he's done, I don't know. And then shows up to next camp, and I'm like, oh, yeah. And then he's at all these tournaments again, and he's still playing well in Spain. So, mate, Abdi will never retire, I reckon. It's going to be him and Terry just seeing who goes on for the longest.
Yeah, they're going to be the two guys that have ever, like the only two guys ever to have a statue built and a jersey retired while they're still playing. Like they're going to have to change number because their jerseys are retired.
Especially if Abdi, the number of teams he's played for, if he gets statues built, they'll be like just dotted all over Europe, just one after
Just a shortage of whatever metal they make statues out of.
the
We have a question written in from your Commonwealth's teammate, Charlie McIntyre. Talking about international basketball, and he said, when's the switch to Algeria happening?
No.
Probably make a good run at trying to make GB and then jump ship if it's
Yeah,
gonna
that's
happen.
what I mean. Well, I got asked by Algeria a few years ago before commies. Commies came around, completely shot that out the water. So
It
I don't
hasn't,
know.
technically. Like, five on
No,
five, it
no, no.
hasn't.
But that's, I think, with my aims and goals, it has, in terms of I'm aiming for that GB squad.
Yeah.
I think it's the best team in the world. I want to be in that. But I've always thought about, like, I don't know, once I'm done, go play for Algeria for a cycle. I don't know. It'd be pretty cool, but.
So for people listening who don't know, you are actually half Algerian, aren't you? You're not just haven't just randomly
Full
set
Algerian.
your
No,
sights on
both
fully
my,
Algerian, sorry.
yeah,
Uh,
both
you
my
haven't
parents.
you haven't just been like, right, to tell you who I want to play for.
Yeah, decided I'm gonna go live in the Algerian desert to get
Yeah.
citizenship.
It's weird, man. With like able-bodied FIBA basketball, they have that rule where every national team can like recruit a naturalized player, and it becomes like a route to getting citizenship. But you can basically do it with a phone call to, the president of the
Yeah.
national team federation. I do wonder what would happen to the wheelchair basketball world if it was like, right, everybody gets one recruiting mission to bring like player X in, and it's just everybody picking like players off the teams that don't have re it'd basically be club basketball at international level, right? Just everyone's like, right, Serbia, you must have a big 4-5 somewhere. Let's see what we can pry loose. We're gonna shift on, Abs. We'll talk your guys' season so far. So for people who don't know, you have taken mine and James's kind of spiritual space as the low pointer for Sheffield Steelers. You were at Coventry before this. I think Coventry's dissolved their Premier League
Yeah,
team. Is that
Coventry.
right? A bunch of people
Yeah,
scat.
odd situation happened at Coventry. I left before it went down, but it all went down. No longer have a Prem side, but they're still about.
Right, okay.
It's not your fault then. All right. That is confirmed.
Let's
We've got that written
put
down.
it
Don't
out
worry.
there.
Everyone listening.
Did they fold because you left? Is that why you say you got out before it went down? They were
That's what my mate Jack likes to say,
All
but.
right, cool. Let's move on. Let's not get anyone in trouble just in case. So yeah, a lot of guys have been in that sort of spot and jumped abroad at the first sort of opportunity possible. Did you think about that? Did you consider it, or were you always set on going to uni and playing for these handful of years in the UK before you try and
I feel
move
like,
on?
yeah, my goals to go abroad, I always wanted to go abroad. I wanted to go as soon as I possibly could, but it wasn't really, I don't know, serious at that point because I hadn't had any offers, didn't really, nobody really knew who I was. I hadn't really put my game out there. I hadn't even had a full season in Prem. So basketball wise, it wouldn't have made sense, I don't think. And my mum and dad really wanted me to go to uni. And it's probably a good decision from them to make me go to uni. So yeah, learned a lot of uni. So I'm happy I went to uni because it 3 years getting a worthwhile degree, I guess. So
Yeah, definitely. And you,
I had the same thing. I was like, "Hey, go to uni and then do whatever you want." But yeah,
yeah.
there's a handful of people who go out a little early. I don't think many people who are like, "Oh, I went too late,"
Yeah.
And you say as well, you listed off the reasons why you didn't think it would necessarily happen for you at the point of it. I promise you, if you squint real hard at some of the people who've given it a crack before, there's people who've gotten offers and headed out there with a lot less of a reputation than what you have, but I think you have made the right move. And
Yeah.
as we've kind of touched on, Steelers are having a pretty good season, but you guys have got most of the season under your belt at this point. And now that you've made the decision to jump there, do you think it's been the right move for you? And do you think you and the team have benefited from pairing up?
I think for me, definitely, it's probably the best decision I could have made, I feel like, at this point, because, well, I have so much trust from Kev and the team. Like, I'm playing minutes I've never played before in Prem, which is helping me massively. Like, I'm improving quicker than I ever have, I think. Yeah, it's just that more responsibility, and the setup's really good. I like everybody's company over there, playing with one of my best mates, Tom Harvey. The only issue is I have to drive 2.5 hours every training session, but your guys' podcast makes it fine.
Oh, there you go. Thanks everyone for listening. I'm joking.
We've got the soundbite, that'll do.
We got him. is there anything specifically appealing about going and learning from a GB one pointer? Like, was that a big, like, was like going and learning off Kev as a sort of perimeter based shooting one pointer? Was that something that you jumped at, or was it just
definitely
geography? Like,
I spoke to a lot of people about it beforehand because I looked at Manchester Revolution as well, but they have an abundance of low pointers at that point. But yeah,
I'd win it the weekend, Abs.
I spoke to Kev over the phone and he was like, yeah, I can teach some stuff. And that, like, obviously I wanted to learn from Kev, knowing his, well, he used to be GB and all that. And the fact that I'd have so much responsibility and learning from such a great like that is good.
Definitely. And I mean, we joked there about how long Abdi's been around, but if you actually look at the options, if you were to say, right, I want to learn from, you know, a long time GB one pointer, your options are Abdi, who is still playing. So unless you were going to go to Malaga to study under him, Matt Byrne is selling chairs for RGK at this point, I think. So unless you're getting in the trade, and then Kev's the other option, right? I can't think who else has even cycled through that would be, you know, and that's obviously the best scenario when you paired up like that. But most important question of this whole thing, can you confirm that they still speak about me and James regularly and in glowing terms?
No.
So that's a no then. Okay, next question.
Regularly is difficult to confirm.
You don't train enough.
every time I hear about you guys, it's positive.
Oh, that's nice. And a follow-up question, follow-up because it's just for mine and Mark's benefit. Can you explain Joe Williams to people who aren't familiar?
No one can explain Joe Williams. I swear, it's great guy. Genuinely, I don't think I've never met a man who speaks so I don't even know how to speak anymore, so less words, I guess, but
yeah,
that doesn't miss.
He's the best finisher I've ever played
with. It's not, I don't think, like, I've seen him miss inside under the basket in about a month.
Are the basketballs in the Northern General Hospital where Sheffield Steelers play still overinflated?
Yes, some of them.
I've
had a shot where I've bricked my finger and like been in near tears going back to defense. But
yeah, it's Sultan's fault. So it's been a strong season for a much revamped Steelers team. You've split games with Manchester and London, and you've made it to Euro Cup finals. Considering that the British League is about as strong as it's been since maybe 2018, 19, a good few years anyway. Yeah. What do you think's set you guys apart this year? What do you think the difference has been?
I think a lot of teams have underestimated us, definitely, because I come from a Coventry team that I wasn't playing much, and Tom's come from Mohawks that weren't amazing. And we've come into an already set up team. Like, you have Maddie, know what Maddie's going to do. George is unbelievable. And then we've got players like Matt Travers, Joe Williams, Joe Caldwell, like, know what they're doing. So we've come in, given energy, press teams, push them, and, well, beaten the big teams that fought. I remember talking to a lot of people saying that, oh, we're going to finish fourth, we're going to have to fight with Jags to make playoffs. But we showed that our level is, well, Euro Cup, that's where we want to be. And that we need to be winning the league. So,
yeah. I was watching the game at the weekend being like, is that Matt Travers? That guy looks an awful lot like Matt Travers if it isn't. I hope he's doing well. And can we get your take on the Sheffield Oldham thing as someone who's kind of new to it? Like, obviously you guys went over, we laughed so much as two ex-Sheffield guys that you went all the way to Hanover to beat Oldham, well, Manchester now. But Is that something you feel like, obviously, when we were there as well, like Mark, you were there practically your whole career, but even me coming in the door for 2 years, I was like, yeah, Sheffield and Oldham's a thing, isn't it? Like,
it's a thing to all the people involved and precisely nobody else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, you can tell there's a rivalry, definitely. Like the way, especially like the players just were going at each other. The Manchester players been in it a long time as well. You can tell that it means something to like Martin and that. And same on our side to George and Joe, all of that, you can feel it. Definitely.
You can tell because both teams have 10 in training for the 2 weeks before.
We've had a good shout. We've had like maybe because it's Euro Cup, but we've had like 12 to 14 most sessions this year, so
Too many.
Yeah, too many. I'd rather have two men. We did have a run. I don't know if you remember, James. We had a run at one point, however many years back, where I think we had nine people for like 6 weeks on the bounce. I was like, I'm gonna literally grab somebody who's not turned up and just make them live in the sports hall, and they can be our 10th person. If
Yeah.
that, yeah, that used to wind me up no end.
First time you get the 10th person, you just tie them to the radiator when you finish training. Be like, all right, we'll see you on Thursday at 8.
For you, Abs, was it because we like talked about the rivalry there? I think it's a massive thing to both teams, even probably with the self-awareness to know that nobody else cares a huge amount. But for you being kind of ex-London, was Oldham or Manchester the bigger game for you, or was, you know, going up against your old club, where, because you guys beat London at home by one, is that right?
Yeah. I
Was
think
that the big one for you personally?
for me, I think yeah, Titans was the more satisfying win
Sure.
back in January that was. So yeah, that was a satisfying win for me for sure. And
Even if Sheffield and Oldham is the rivalry, a win over Titans is always welcome under any and all circumstances.
yeah.
Shouts to Jack Perry, who's gonna get in our ear now, I'm sure. But yeah, we're As we kind of get towards the end of the season, unclear how the seedings will shake out. I think you guys are top at the moment by virtue of having played more games. It'll ultimately come down to points difference because I think you guys have all taken one off each other and lost one to each other in like a three-way tie. So are you looking forward to the playoffs? Do you hope you see Manchester again? Hope you see London again? Or the quite real possibility that you see both? Which scenario would you like?
So after our loss on the weekend against Manchester, we are basically confident that we're going to see Manchester first for the semi. So we're just planning towards that, and hopefully we'll see both of them play in the final. Because I do like an upset, but I am expecting Titans to go through Jags, to be honest, and get to the final. So we just got to do our job. We've already beaten Manchester twice by 20 plus points. So
Sure.
we had a hiccup in the thing in the last game. The moment got to us knowing that we could win the league,
Yeah.
but
Well, and you damn near beat them. If you, I think you guys went from like 13 down with a couple of minutes left in the third quarter to then forcing overtime, and that you guys lost that overtime period. It was very, like any overtime game could go either way, right? But
yeah, we ended up we lost by four, I think, and we were first quarter was absolutely dreadful. We went down by 16 at one
jeez.
point, and then
Ooh.
Kev changed it up, brought it, I think it was 9 or 11 going into the half, changed it again, and then we were up at some we got our first lead, I think, in overtime.
Yeah.
And then yeah, we just kind of the experience. Martin hit a big shot, Tyler hit a big shot,
Yeah,
and then
Tyler's
Tyler
one was
iced
big,
it.
man.
Yeah.
We'll land one as well.
Yeah.
Full disclosure on this one. So I knew the game was happening. Had various things go. It's the only British League game I've ever known to be played at 5 p.m. on a Sunday. Like that was wild. But I knew it was going on. Had some stuff to be on with, so I tried to put the game on like the small screen in my kitchen. It was halftime. You guys were down 8, and I was like, "Oh, here we go. Like this might be something." And then you went from down 8 to down 13, and I just turned it off because I was busy doing whatever. And then I just kind of chalked it up as a loss and had like I didn't follow it the rest of the way. And then knowing we were having you on here today, I was like, actually better check that result out and see what happened. And I was gradually watching the score like tick back, and then I was like, hang on, there's 20 seconds left in the game, but 25 minutes left on the YouTube stream. Did this go to overtime? And I turned this off at the end of the third quarter, thinking it was out of reach.
You know, I didn't even know it went to overtime because I was doing something in the middle of the day, so I like watched the first bit and then went to the end, and the scoreboard when it's in overtime just says fourth quarter again. So I just assumed that you lost by however many in four quarters, and then Mark mentioned that it was overtime, and I was like, oh, okay, I gotta go watch this. But been 40 minutes and we haven't really mentioned Euro Cup. Should we shift on to Euro Cup?
Nah, it doesn't seem important.
Talking about Sheffield Oldham. So you qualified by placing third in the Euro Cup 1 prelim group. Just for anyone, brackets me, who doesn't remember exactly what that looked like, Abs, can you recap your group for
So
how
it
that
was
went?
us, Manchester, Pilatus Dragons, Hanover and Fenerbahce.
Wow,
So
decent group.
yeah, so tough group. But going into that, we were like, our main priority was we looked at Pilatus Dragons. They got a guy I didn't even know was even still playing, Jared Arambula, absolute baller. But we had him, so we had to focus on them. But we were confident going into that game. It was mainly Manchester looking at, because they'd beaten Steelers in the season before that, both games, I'm pretty sure. Looking at that, we decided that if we win that game, we probably qualify. So
Also, there was probably a camp of people within Steelers who was like, we can lose every other game by 100 points, but if we beat those guys, it's a job
yeah,
well
I think yeah, that was the main
done.
consensus. We went, to be fair, we got absolutely blitzed by Hanover. Like,
Very good team. Don't worry about
yeah,
it. Like,
in
that's
the
meant
first
to happen, I
quarter.
think.
But
Like,
yeah, but we kept our own with Fenerbahce for a half.
oh, do you have any tips?
There. The
I'm playing them this weekend at some
thing
point.
is, they're tough, man. They pressed us first half,
Never.
but I don't know. We got through the press. I think it's because Tom Harvey is absolutely rapid. And George is fast as well. So we got through, but they've just realized as soon as they get into a set defense, we have absolutely nothing, because they play like this weird merger of Turkish defense and a normal zone. So they sit, I think his name is Samak, just in the middle, and then you have Efturk just hassling everyone. It's yeah, tough. But yeah, we were with him for a half. That was just because I think we were getting layups and breaking their press. As soon as it went to set offense, we couldn't get anything, and they just come down our end. I remember one play where I was like, "Yeah, this is done." I Samak was at the top of the key, about a foot and a half behind the 3-point line. I was on the free throw line. I was like, "You know what? This he can have it from there." Hadn't really seen him before that game, and
And
he
yes, he
absolutely.
can.
He swishes it from there, and I'm like, oh my God. Call timeout. Kev tells me to jump him. I'm like, oh. But
Is my favorite stat from the your guys qualifying round was you guys were the only team to have a lead on Fenerbahce at any point in the qualifying group, and it was 3-0. That was it from that point.
love that.
I'm gonna ask you about this. Because I've heard this story from a couple of different sources, and you may or may not wish to confirm or deny this. How do you plead to the accusations that Steelers sabotaged Manchester by making the transfer bus leave from the airport without you?
I'd like to deny that it was our fault in any way possible. I remember very vividly, we'd got on the bus, we see Manchester getting out of the airport slower than us, which is, I think, completely their fault. And the bus driver just immediately starts driving, and Manchester, with very confused looks on their face. I guess they were confused with us waving at them, but
Ha
I still don't think it was our fault.
Well,
Oh,
it
God.
doesn't sound like it was, but it doesn't sound like you helped your case if you were
Yeah, you didn't stop it, is what I would say. So yeah, based on that, you became probably the only amateur club to qualify for any of the finals, as far as we're aware, and you picked up a little All-Star Five
Yeah,
for your
kind of just
troubles.
the Zoom reaction again.
Oh yeah, Mark
Okay.
is Zoom clapping. Sounds weird. So yeah, all that to say, you're going to Euro Cup 3 finals in by the lead this weekend. You leave tomorrow, I assume.
Yeah, we leave tomorrow, yeah.
Cool. You're like, no, I got to be in the airport in 20 minutes. So Group A is via the lead, Murcia, Treviso, Merkezi, and Group B is Gaziantep, yourselves, Izmir, and Vigo, then not Vigo, and now Vigo again.
We'll see. Who knows?
So we have obviously, there was a whole thing where allegedly they were, will we go through the rough, will I bullet point this, Mark?
Yeah, you can do.
So the whole thing was obviously Lewis Edwards leaving Vigo. They replaced him with another player whose name I don't quite have on the tip of
It's
my tongue.
Bernabe, isn't it?
Yeah,
Bernabe
Bernabeu. Yeah.
Costa, something like that.
Yes. So they replaced him. Apparently, they have a paper trail of going to the IWBF, letting them know what was happening, seeing if they could register him. They said yes. This is all on their website. They released a statement. And they went to Europa League 3 qualifiers, won the whole thing, and then were then told a couple of weeks ago when their flights were already booked or their travel was already booked to by the lead that they were disqualified for playing a non-registered player. This has apparently, as of today, I think, been overturned. So they are back in. Do you have any thoughts on
I
this
think
whole malarkey?
the whole situation is just mad, isn't it? It's so silly because they gave Vigo the permission to get the player. And then from my understanding, from hearing from people around the situation, IWBF just decided, oh damn, we didn't realize that player was that good. We actually, that's not allowed.
That's wild.
That is, if that is what's happened, that is so irrelevant. The quality of the player is irrelevant, I would say.
And also crucially, that bit's not Vigo's fault. They're not gonna be like, well, we need a replacement player, but let's not get one who's too good.
Yeah,
And
hey, IWBF, we've had a player that has had to leave the team. Can we please replace him? Like, is the guy a goober? No, like, well, then, no, like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, only if he sucks, is it like you don't get to.
What's
Also,
even worse?
if that was a bar that you had to pass, like, you'd have to set like statistical lines for them to follow that. Like, that's completely insane if that is hypothetically, allegedly what happened. But yeah, probably doesn't help you because Vigo not being in your group would have been really nice because they're a good team.
You guys were in the situation with them. Had they missed the group and there not been a replacement put in, you guys would have just had to steal a game off Izmir, which would have been tough, but not completely outside the realms of possibility. And you're now in a situation where we've got this in the notes. In your group of four, I think it would be fair to say Gaziantep are favourites to finish top of that group, and you
Ah, there you go.
should concern yourselves with scrapping for the second spot, which you now have to beat two professional teams rather than one, which is twice as difficult. And also, you didn't know that Vigo were reinstated until about 5 seconds before we hit the record button. So,
Yeah, you literally
so.
told me before the session. And from the Sheffield Steeler messenger chat, it seems like IWBF haven't communicated that to us yet at all. So
Jesus. Imagine if
who
we
knows?
were wrong, although it would be very funny that we are literally informing our listeners, but actually via interviewing him. We're informing the masses, but specifically telling you live. But
So yeah, we'll work on the assumption Vigo will be there, and if they aren't, we'll go back and edit this out. But how do you go about, as James mentioned, you're the one amateur club in a field of seven other teams that are all professional clubs, and how do you go about preparing for a group stage like this and knowing you're going to have to steal one, if not two, wins to make it through to the next round?
I mean, for us, it's we're trying not to put too much pressure on ourselves. We had a big chat yesterday at training. One of the main things I got from it was, like, yeah, we are the only amateur club. We've got everything to gain and nothing much really to lose. Nobody really thought we'd even make it to finals. So we're in a position where we know we can be at. And I don't know, I don't think it's too far-fetched us, given teams like Vigo, Izmir, a run, a good game. So we just need to make sure to stay energetic, because as soon as we come out flat, if we come out flat first quarter like we did against Hanover, we know the game's done. So it's all about just keep staying to what we do well, playing with energy and not letting the pressure like demolish us.
Yeah. You looked off camera there as if you're reading that script, as if Kev has been like, oh, you're going on the podcast with those guys. Here's what you should say. yeah, you mentioned...
He just wrote the team talk on the back of his hand while it was happening yesterday. So he was like, okay, so energy, right? Make sure it's impermanent. Sorry, I was muted there because there was a wasp and I was trying to get it out the window.
you mentioned, Abs, you think it's worked in your favour, kind of... teams underestimating you just in the home league this season. Do you think there's potentially more of that to come as you guys get into Europe? Because as much as I would like to praise the kind of diligence and professionalism as a lot of these clubs, I would be willing to bet a few of them have been like, yep, not going to watch any video on those guys. We'll be fine.
I think for us, yeah, I think the fact that we can't run a viable stream at Northern General has helped us.
Hell yeah.
So even if Oscar Gerblack does decide he wants to watch us play against Plymouth.
He doesn't.
He can't.
I don't know him, but he doesn't.
Yeah, he does, though.
Yeah, and you want to talk about guys who don't know that Plymouth is a place he might be top of mind.
Yeah. But any one of the players in any of the clubs, actually, except for maybe Oscar Knight, because he is from Plymouth.
Yeah.
I'd love to like know how many people... if you asked all the people that are going to your EuroLeague finals, you'd be like, hey, do you know about this place? And be like, is there a three-point line there? And can I smoke? Like, all right, cool. Yeah, it sounds all right. But, yeah, like, how do you go about scouting? Like, have you guys talked about certain teams, or are you talking more about yourselves? Like, what's the split percentage-wise? Is it like 80-20, we look after ourselves and the results will come? Or... are you guys like, okay, so this team, we've watched this video and we've spoken about X, Y, and Z?
I think for us, it's like only having the two sessions a week means we have to refine like very specific things. We don't like, sadly, we just don't have the time that the professional clubs have in like working every single aspect of our game. So we work on what we know works for us, like the basics and yeah, like how we want to play. And yeah, I watched every single team play, and I know the coaches have, George has, Tom has. So it's all about, I think, how we match up with them. I think that's the main thing for us. It's not really what we do, because we know what we can do and we play quite the same way every game. So it just comes down to what they're doing, how we can react to that.
Sounds like your secrets.
Sounds like the new generation of Steelers are much more video tolerant than some of our past teams. This is a real story. I think Easter weekend, whichever year it was, Ben Fox once refused to come to like a full group gathering because we were having a barbecue at mine, and he flat out turned it down because it was like a week and a half before Euro Cup, and he was convinced I was going to like trap everybody inside and be like, hey, we're watching this Cologne game from however many weeks ago. So he just turned the invite down. So it's good to hear the video analysis has stepped it up. But yeah, you guys are obviously way limited compared to a couple of those other teams by, you know, just in terms of you guys get two sessions a week together. You can't be sitting in front of, you know, you can't be rolling the TV in like it's the last day of school and watching some video. But I mean, that's the kind of thing, right, where you guys are qualified, and that makes it, if you do steal a game or, you know, by whatever cause of events you guys make it through, it just makes it that much more wild that it's happened, right? That these teams that you're going up against have every resource and availability that you guys don't, theoretically. And you're there to stick it to him anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
So, on which note would you like to call from the two groups of four who you think are making it through to the semi-finals and beyond?
He said no.
I think
I would not.
From the other group, I'll say I think Mercy are going to finish top with Vaidlid second. But I think that game could go either way from their meetings in the league.
So you don't watch that much video, is what we'll do.
I do think.
Unless you're talking about Mercia and Vaidlid from last year, where all their games were close, I think Mercia might have the edge on this one.
Yeah, but I agree, but I've spoken to people at Mercia, and Tom's spoken to a few people, and they're looking at that game thinking it's going to be a lot closer than people think, but I don't know. So I think that's going to be, I think that's a top two. I think that's quite a clear top two in that group anyway.
Sure.
For us, for our group, I think Gaziantep probably top. And I'm looking at Izmir and Vigo and us, and like my heart wants to say we'll pull away two wins. And that's what I'll say. I think we'll qualify just to back the boys.
Stop the podcast. We've got somebody picking themselves. This has never happened before.
Mark didn't let me pick us in EuroLeague 1 yesterday. So, like, Mark pushed back when I was like, hey, Bilbao could potentially win EuroLeague 1. He was like, hey, shut up. So don't feel bad that Mark doesn't believe you. Mark doesn't believe in us. He doesn't want to see us winning, abs. Hilton's down.
I said that there is a real scenario that this is my particular attachment to EuroCup 3 tier is obviously I'm no longer Steelers adjacent, but will root for you guys when stuff like this is going on. And Treviso is made up of a bunch of guys from my old team in Italy. So whatever the fifth, sixth, or you know, seventh, eighth, or however the lower half breaks out, if you guys cross over with Treviso, it's like the battle for my heart on this one. So let them know about that.
Battle for Mark's heart, but sure, who'd want it?
Yeah, exactly. It's rotten.
All rotten and turned to stone.
So yeah, if we get those top four through, so we get Mercia, let's say Mercia crossover with you guys and Gaziantep crossover with Vaidlid for argument's sake. How are we calling the medal positions from that point onwards?
Well, a rough day for us with Mercia's press. But again, back the boys. But no, I think Mercia will win it probably. With Gaziantep second, and then
yeah, okay.
I think they beat Vaidlid, and then
yeah,
the third place game, the bronze game would be us and Vaidlid, which I actually think would be a tight game. I do.
George
think,
has 40. You're in business.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. George has a big game. I think we're in it. So
George against Yelmer, the Madiba Derby.
I'd like to say a Sheffield see the bronze medal, maybe.
Hell
but no,
yeah.
if I'm being realistic, it's probably, I think that top four will be Mercia, Gaziantep, Vaidlid, and then us, maybe.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. I respect it. I think you guys sneaking into that would be a massive achievement in itself.
Yeah,
like, I don't think you need to go there and try and win it, but I don't think winning it or bust is a real thing. For the only
that's what I mean.
Game in a big tournament,
like, we've come to terms that we've kind of got like nothing to lose, everything to gain.
So we're going
as far as we can. We're in the tournament to try win it. Obviously, you don't go.
Yeah,
you don't go to Euro Cups and not try win. So we're going to do everything we can.
Do you guys have, in that sense, do you guys have a benchmark for yourself where you're like, hey, we're here to win it, but. You know, we had this a few years back when we ended up in the group stage with both Bilbao and Beşiktaş, if I remember rightly. And like, obviously, only two teams could go through. So we knew we'd drawn dead as soon as we were in that. And from that point, we were like, well, we actually think we're the third best team behind those two. But like, the best we can logistically finish is fifth by the time we've played both of them. So our target for that year realistically was to finish fifth. In kind of not insane circumstances that saw wild upsets and unpredictable stuff. But do you guys have an equivalent benchmark where, like, hey, we, all signs are that we're going to go out to win it, but this is what we want to call like our realistic expectation, I guess.
Yeah, I think I don't I can't really talk for everybody else, but for me personally, like I feel like we've got a favorable group compared. I'd rather be in this group than the Mercia and Vard Lid group, to be honest.
Okay.
And we're looking at a semi-final, I think. Get to a semi-final, I think, prove a lot of people wrong, get into a semi-final, I'll be really happy with that. I think the team will be happy with that.
Yeah,
Just
man.
a chance to fight for a medal would be mad for an amateur team.
Final follow-up question. Do you know who's flying at about the same time as you and who you might be able to strand at the airport this time? Because that might give you a competitive advantage.
So I reckon if Gaziantep are going to Madrid via Heathrow, then we might be able to leave them in England. But other than that, I think not a chance.
They'd roll out of there and Oscar would be like, right, I've heard this Plymouth place it is the business.
Yeah.
Let's go have some fish and chips beside the sea. It'd be great. Plymouth is very roughly beside the sea in my
Can you
mind.
imagine it if Oscar did that after like years of his building up like the villain persona, and it just there was just like a picture of him on a bench on like a pebble beach eating some fish and chips and finally at peace and less furious. That
Just
would be
keep doing
a win for everybody at Euro Cup.
I'd love that. This is so weird. We speak so much about people that we don't know. So
Definitely.
great. Right, Abs, I have a couple of stupid questions
Yep.
to round off the episode, if you don't mind. We'll bring back an old favorite of mine. What is the best preparation of potato?
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. I love my potatoes. I think for
Man.
me,
If you're like, I love my potatoes, and then you're like, hey, there's these things called chips. Have you ever
I
tried that? Like, don't set the bar too high now.
think a good old fashioned mash. I think
All
I love a
right.
mash.
I respect it. What is the best piece of advice you've ever gotten?
Layups from James McSorley.
Context to that is every time Abs clicks his like clicks his straps together and gets in his chair, he just immediately goes to the 3-point line, whether he's on a court with people who will ever need him to be out there or not. And I just push over to him every time. Like, my words are just layups, Abs, layups. That's the whole
Yeah.
gig. That's the whole job description. Two bullet points, layups and layups. What's the worst piece of advice you've ever gotten? Layups.
Last piece of advice is a tough one.
Don't worry about it. Don't throw anyone under the bus. Like, don't take this seriously.
Oh, no, do.
No, I can't really think of one. I'm sorry to be boring, but
No, it's fine. Like, we've had people say stuff and actually like trash talk, and we'd be like, "Ooh, don't do that." All right. And to finish off, what is the weirdest thing you've ever seen on a basketball court?
So I'm gonna keep this one anonymous because I don't want to get people in stuff. But
Genuinely nervous.
I've been no, it's not crazy to be fair. Playing a basketball match at a training camp, and I've never encountered this player before. I know that he is a low pointer, a 1-5, and after the training session, this guy gets out from his chair. Full sprints the court and hits five corner threes in a row while 1v1ing are 4.5.
What? Weird.
Yeah.
I was expecting this to be more sinister or more hygiene related for
And
some reason.
who did you say that
Anonymous.
Cool. Yeah. Well, yeah. Anonymous, the man known for more quotes than anyone in the world. The great ancient philosopher Anonymous.
Wild. I've never. You're the first one to break that kind of territory. It's almost always toilet humor that
Oh yeah,
lands.
I've seen.
When you said it was a 1.5, and you saw him get out of his chair at the end of the training session, I was like, oh, here we go. It's another
Yeah.
story. But no, that was a curveball. Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's everything then. Mark, anything else from you?
Nothing for me. Thanks a lot for being here, Abs, and good
Thank
luck
you.
to you and the rest of the guys out at Euro
Cheers.
Cup.
All the best, man. And thanks everyone for listening. This will be out. I always tell people when it'll be out. They're not being warned, so it doesn't matter. This will be out when you're listening to it. Take it
If
easy.
not before.
Bye.